So yeah, it's Sunday afternoon, it's 2 p.m. My landlord announced that they are investigating certain apartments for adherence to certain mortgage codes and or violations this week, which sounds darkly, nefariously like some type of quasi-fascist scheme to sort of look into my life, whatever life I might have, which is very little. And just fuck it up. So anyways, I hope you guys are doing okay today. It is April the 24th, I believe. It is Indianapolis and it is 2016. It is around 2 p.m., but it's a beautiful day. Beautiful day out there. If you look out the window, I wish you could see out my window. I'm looking to the east, so I don't look to the sun at this time of day. I look out to that hazy blueness that rises above that line of green, because the trees, the leaves, they're coming to life again, people. They're coming to life. Anyways, that song was Alicia Bridges. I love the nightlife, and yeah, I really don't know that I do, and I don't know if I'm ready for it. I am technically single, divorced, whatever the fuck you want to call it, but I think I've given up on dating, and I think I may become a monk or a religious person of my own ilk. I don't know if you're aware of this, but I have taken on the mantle of minister within the Universal Life Church, and I know that you're probably wondering, Dan, how could you make such a radical and huge decision that requires so much effort on your part? I mean, it required going to a website and filling out a form and pushing a button. And if you actually wanted the documents, you had to pay them some money. So I basically went to what amounts to a theological diploma mill, the Universal Life Church, and I got myself turned into a minister. So I am Minister Dan, Father Dan. I'm calling myself Holy Dan, holydan.com. I am the Holy Dan, holydan.com. Anywho, my first sermon, and I may have many sermons, and I may have more than one a day, so some days I may go weeks without a sermon. It really depends upon how lazy I am, but I might talk about it. Anyways, yeah, I've given up on the single life, but I'd like to talk about is something I got done doing and I'm still working on. It's a little performance art involving mortgage papers. I did something similar to this a few months ago with some mortgage papers that I was a co-signer to for a family member. And FYI, I've got nothing against a family member. I just hate banks. I hate most of the bankers today. I understand in economic terms the necessity of banks, but I think that for the most part, what we have running the system today are criminals. So I don't even know if we should call them banks. I think they're just money laundering schemes. I hate these money laundering schemes. You have to put your money into them. They make you do it, but then you get sucked into these very ridiculous situations. So I ended up co-signing and everything's happy and they got their condo, somewhere near Tacoma, so that when the Ring of Fire lights up here in a couple weeks and that giant Lahar comes screaming down Mount Rainier like a thunderbird going several hundred miles an hour, at least my friend or family member person who I helped out will be able to look outside their window, maybe, although they're probably facing the direction of Puget Sound. So, more likely, they'll step out on the back porch, or maybe they'll step out into the back driveway and they'll look up and they'll see that giant dark monster, what the Native Americans, the Coastal Salish Indians called the Thunderbird, coming screaming down Mount Rainier towards Tacoma. And at that moment, they'll probably be asking themselves, maybe that document that Dan fired several hundred bolts of pistol, crossbow ammunition, little arrows at, maybe it was ridiculous. Maybe it was all just fucking ridiculous and pointless and stupid. Maybe. I really don't know. I hope it doesn't happen because I have family members in the Pacific Northwest, but I'll be honest with you. I had heebie-jeebies about that place about 2 years ago. I cannot put all the blame on Seattle. I have to put some of it on myself and being divorced and shit. But I don't know. Something just kind of got into my skin. I got this feeling that if I didn't leave, I might not be able to. Almost like it was going to become, you know, a city taken over by pod people. And you know, I had this favorite German restaurant in Seattle, Heidelberg House. FYI, it's still technically on my list of things that don't suck on my blog, you know, iamsully.com, whatever. But it's still technically on my list of things that don't suck. The Heidelberg House, you know, in the Ravenna neighborhood in Seattle. The only thing is, it has a strike through. It's crossed out. It's no longer open. It's closed. So here's this amazing German restaurant in Seattle that serves fresh, nutritious German food, like German food that's actually authentic German food, run by people who care. This is an amazing private, local institution. And in all likelihood, the stupid $15 an hour tax, and minimum wage, the $15 an hour minimum wage that the stupid socialists at the Seattle fucking city council put into place, in all likelihood, that probably did lead to them leaving. I don't know. Maybe they went someplace else. But when I searched the web, I couldn't find them. And, you know, I can't put all the blame on the stupid socialists in Seattle because, really, the world economy is crashing. Nobody wants to talk about it. I'll just say it. Just get out of the way for today. Anyways, I decided to do a part two, and there'll probably be a part three of the firing crossbows at mortgage papers. And I was doing it today, and my God, I think it was the most exercise I've gotten since September because, well, maybe that's not true, but it felt almost true. And, you know, I've got to change that. I'm probably going to start walking again next week, but that's a whole other topic, and I'll probably podcast about it because it'll seem so triumphal if I actually go out and walk. But fuck, let's just leave that on the table and just table it for now. Anyways, I was thinking about this whole thing, like all this pent-up frustration. So here's the sermon, I guess, the sermon from, you know, Father Dan, Minister Dan, you know, the Holy Dan. Is it, you know, what is it? What is it to hate or to be angry? Because I was thinking about something today. I saw a post about suicide rates, and I already did a podcast about suicide. I don't want to do another one. But it struck me that I had this basic question, and this is a tough question because it goes to me and my fetish around shooting crossbows at mortgage papers and my basic disgust with central bankers. You know, if I met someone like Lloyd Blankfein or Ben Bernanke or George Soros or frankly even Bill Gates, because he's a sketchy guy from my perspective. But let's just keep it to like George Soros or Ben Bernanke or fucking Alan Greenspan or fucking Timothy Geithner, any of these swarmy, scummy, you know, fucking Jamie Dimon, these scumbags. If you met one of these scumbags and you were on a hiking trail, let's say you're hiking up in the mountains. You're up in the fucking mountains. In Indiana, we don't have mountains, but let's say you're in Brown County and you're hiking around the hills and you see fucking Jamie Dimon on a cliff, like the only cliff, let's say, in Brown County. So the only cliff that he could probably kill himself at. So he's standing on this cliff. And for whatever reason, even though it's about the only cliff you could probably kill yourself in Brown County, you're the only ones there. It's just you and Jamie Dimon. And Jamie Dimon's there, and he looks really, really, you know, sad. And I'll even throw one in. He looks honestly, you know, recondite or whatever. He looks honestly sad, like he really feels, you know, like the guilt or the pressure of the guilt. I mean, I got to tell you, this entire thought experiment is almost implausible at the get-go because I think these people are sociopaths, and I don't think they're capable of guilt that would lead to suicide. But let's just assume for the sake of argument that you saw someone like Jamie Dimon. Here's a guy who has engineered financial schemes in the last few decades that have led to the ruin of millions of people. Millions of people's lives have been destroyed because of schemes he helped engineer, that he went along with, that he supported, that he facilitated. He is a total scumbag, okay? In terms of terrorism, here's a financial terrorist who is likely responsible for some thousands of deaths, at least, in terms of suicides and people whose lives were cut short because their lives were destroyed by his fucking financial tyranny, his bullshit. If you saw him on this trail, and you're on the trail walking, you're walking and you see Jamie Dimon and he's standing there, I mean, what would you do? You're walking on the trail. You're walking along the trail. You see him there. He's crying. He looks honestly sad, truthfully sad. I mean, I don't know how you figure that one out, but let's assume for the sake of argument that you have that fucking skill that whatever, you know, the chosen one from Once Upon a Time on that show has. You know, you can tell if someone's fucking lying or not. Fucking Emma, whatever. Yeah, I watched that show. I already feel guilty about it. Just shut up. But no, let's say you knew honestly that he was that he really did feel sad and guilty, and he wanted to kill himself. So he was ready to do it, and you also knew he was going to. You knew that he was going to. I don't know how you would know that. I don't honestly believe this thought experiment even flies. But let's say you also just know, as a matter of fact, that he will do it, and it's only a few minutes away. Would you spend the time and effort trying to convince Jamie Dimon or Lloyd Blankfein or George Soros or Ben Bernanke or Timothy Geithner or any other of these swarmy, scummy, just really just terrible people who've done horrible damage to the world, would you try to stop them from killing themselves? Because I'll be honest with you, I have thought about this, and yes, I know, I am putting myself as Father Dan, and so you know, this is all technically satire, so if there's anyone out there trying to, like, figure out if I'm trying to start a satanic religion or a cult, listen, it might sound like it, but I will periodically remind people that this is satire, and also just a little bit of criticism that I think people have throughout time figured out that you can embed in satire. But ultimately, it's satire with a little bit of essaying and opinion thrown in. But it's not intended to be a real religion. So please, folks, you know, disclaimer, right? But this is about me. This is honestly about me. And I will tell you right now, if I was giving the sermon to a group of people and I was explaining this thought experiment, I am not really sure what I would advise. I would like to tell them, you know, yeah, you got to like turn the other cheek and, you know, Christ is the one to judge. On the other hand, when I think about what Christ did in the temple with the money changers, I have to ask myself, was he really a turn the other cheek kind of guy? I mean, ultimately, everybody has their breaking point. And even the great activists who, quote unquote, were nonviolent activists like Gandhi or Martin Luther King, even they recognized that everybody has a breaking point, that there's a point at which if someone's going to treat you as if you're an animal, then behaving like an animal is not that surprising. I was looking at the lyrics of that song Uprising by Muse, and I know it's an old song, it's 2009, I know these days old is, you know, measured in a year, but I was looking at the lyrics to that song Uprising, and it struck me that on the one hand, they're kind of simplistic, they're kind of like, you know, almost what a teenager would write about the man. But on the other hand, if I'm really honest, they express a kind of simple poetry that I believe in many ways represents the zeitgeist that we're living in, that, you know, the spirit of our time. I think that you know, if you really want to understand how a lot of people feel, especially millennials, listen to songs like that and understand that there are people out there who feel totally disenfranchised, totally pissed off. And if they're walking down one of these trails and they see a Lloyd Blankfein, and honestly, most of these people are angry, but they're so tuned out, they wouldn't even know who Lloyd Blankfein is or who George Soros is. But if they were walking along the trail and they knew who that person was, and they saw the person sad and looking like they were going to, you know, off themselves in some way, either with, you know, a gun or jumping off a cliff or something, would they, in that hypothetical scenario, I'm not talking about me right now, let's just pretend we're asking almost a statistical question. I know this is unfair and very, very non-scientific, so it's pure philosophy. But from just knowing what you know from your own experience, your own knowledge, you know, knowing what you know from your own studies, what's more likely? That the angry, pissed off 20-something that lives with their parents and is unemployed and more or less has no future in front of them walks along and they actually try to console and hug and you know, kiss and make, you know, George Soros feel better and say, listen, you know, Vampire King, you know, I know you're terrible, you're this really horrible guy, but you're okay, and people love you and you just shouldn't do it. Don't do it, man. Don't do it. I mean, I suppose let's call that scenario A. That's a scenario where the angry person helps George Soros. But there's also scenario B. And scenario B, I frankly think, given my own studies and given the propensities of human nature and given the fact that we completely destroyed any kind of ethical or moral education in society today, scenario B is more likely. In that scenario, I think the person comes along and they think about the fact that they're living at home with their parents and they're 29 years old and they have 2 degrees and probably are smart and capable and they want to work, but they can't find shit. And in this case, this person's working 2 jobs. One job's at 7-Eleven and the other job's at Chipotle. And that guy runs into Soros and he has his fucking one day off from 7-Eleven and Chipotle and he runs into Soros on that fucking trail. I'll tell you what, if it's some dude like me and I was 29 years old, because I'm 46, my testosterone ain't what it used to be, so the dial gets turned down a bit. But if I remember the way I was when I was 29 and I came across George Soros and he was standing on a cliff, I would help. I would throttle him off the cliff, make sure nobody's around. But he would go down. I would just say, you know what? I'm going to give you some help, buddy. Here you go. Grab him by the shirt. Grab him by the pants. Don't leave any marks, you know, to the extent that you can. And just throw him off the cliff, just like you're tossing midgets or something. I don't know how tall George Soros is, but if he happens to be short, that would be like a twofer, because it would be exactly like tossing midgets. And I know you're going to say to yourself, Dan, you claim to be a satirical holy man, and you're giving advice that sounds a lot like homicide. And no, what I'm basically telling you is that every living thing has a right to self-defense. And if you come across a cancer cell, the human version of a cancer cell, you can say to yourself, I'm going to try to talk the cancer cell off the cliff. You know, cancer cell, I know you're malignant, and if I allow you to live, you're basically going to destroy the world. But you shouldn't hurt yourself. Don't take that poison in. Don't let that radar beam touch a cancer cell. You have something to live for. I'm sorry, but I don't know a good, honest white blood cell that would have that conversation with cancer cell. I think white blood cell would say, you know, cancer cell, I think you make some really great arguments, but being that I'm only like, you know, 5 days old and I never went to college, I don't really give a fuck. Here, take this. And then, you know, cancer cell's destroyed in a puff of smoke, because that's how dramatic things need to be inside of my ideal immune system. I don't think people should kill people. I believe in the non-aggression principle, and I hold to it. I don't think people should be bullies. If I saw George Soros on the trail and he wanted to kill himself, I don't know if I would stop him, but I don't think I would, you know, encourage him. I think I would just turn away. Honestly, it seems so implausible. It would be like running into an alien, or basically Bill Gates showing up at my door and saying, you know, Dan, You're a really cool dude, and I just want to like donate a bunch of money just so you can move to Denver and just live and be. And I don't think that's ever going to happen, but you know, it could happen. Just like you could run into George Soros, who wants to kill himself. I don't think it will happen, but it could. Now, that's the thing, though. I don't think you should kill George Soros. I don't think you should kill any of these people. I don't believe anyone should act out in violence, but I think everyone has a right to self-defense. And that's where things get complicated in our society today, because in our society, and I think most societies, people are being pushed so far that they're being given almost no space. No space for free speech, no space for free organization, no space for privacy, and basically being told that the future is a giant shit sandwich and you should be happy about eating it, and if you're not happy, here's a drug. I don't believe people should act out, but I'm not surprised that they do. And at some point, I think that's almost going to become like a plague of madness. You know, I've discussed this topic before, but when I was in graduate school many years ago, I read a paper by Professor Davies called A Theory of Revolution. And since I've already addressed this many times, you can look it up yourself. Professor Davies, Towards a Theory of Revolution. He published it in 1962. And according to Davies, there are two kinds of societies that are unlikely to have lots of instability. the stable rich and the stable poor. The stable rich societies will be stable because they've always been rich. There's no delta. My parents were more or less rich. I'm rich. Now, it doesn't mean it's a straight line, but the epicycles are moderate. So you never really feel like you're ever getting really far ahead or falling very far behind. Most people, you would call it like the middle class society, where everybody attains a certain level and everyone becomes essentially the same class, which would be the ideal, almost the ideal middle class society. Some people used to think Switzerland was close to that. I honestly don't know. I've never studied the demographics. This is all hypothetical bullshit. Follow me with it. The other type of stable society, according to Davies, is the society that's historically poor. It's a society that's always been poor, is poor, and probably will be poor. According to Davies, if you study these societies, they don't see themselves as poor because there's nothing to compare with, and B, in general, even if they have a low-level poverty, by Western technological standards, they're not usually poor in any real sense. There's lots of things they have that we don't have. And it's something a lot of Western people don't think about when you think about what you have access to. Like, for example, there are people who live in Alaska, and I think there's some people it probably upsets them, and it sucks to live there. But there are probably some people who live there and say, you know what, sure, I do a crappy job, but I live in Alaska. I love the outdoors. I love to hunt. I love to fish. It's amazing. So there are resources that are less tangible than necessarily, you know, how much money you make or how much prestige you have. Anyways, according to Davies, if a society is more or less stable poor, they're stable poor, they're fine. It's the societies that go through a transition, and it's a rapid transition up initially. That's where things really get dangerous. It builds tension, essentially, within the model, but you have a rapid period of transition. Think about China since 1970, okay? And I know a lot of people wonder, why, Dan, are you so pessimistic on China? Technically, I'm not pessimistic. I think China is going to be either a loose federation or two or three countries within 20 years. The reason why I say this is that it's a demographic time bomb in its own way. Its demographic issues have to do with ethnicity, and they also have to do with the haves and have-nots. People think that China solved that problem. I hate to break it to you. Nobody's solved that problem, and certainly China hasn't. But China has gone through this period up until recently, this period of tremendous economic growth. And so everybody in China, at least since like the 80s, has kind of had this expectation since the 80s or the 90s that things are going to just keep getting better and better and better. And according to Davies, this is the danger spot, because if you have a setback and the setback lasts too long, the people, they don't compare that to where they were, excuse me, where their parents were, for example, or where their grandparents were. They compare it to where they were 10 years ago or 15 years ago. And that becomes the delta. And that essentially, that delta, that difference between expectations and reality, or the J curve, as some people call it, that's really the source of revolution and chaos. I think the United States has had several epicycles of that, and we went through one, I think, in the 90s. I think in the 90s, we went through a period where we thought, oh my God, you know, we got a new economy and everything's new and we don't have to worry about, you know, factories or building shit because we can all just sit at home and sell shit on eBay. And I think that people wanted to believe that, and frankly speaking, people still believe it today. It's scary, it's sad, and the rude awakening that's coming, and I don't even want to pretend to have any desire to counsel people about, that rude awakening is going to be terrible. But anyways, according to Davies, America too might be set up for some dangerous times, because again, we've had, even though it's all funky economics, and even all it's bogus economics, it's not like it's real growth. We've had a lot of faux growth in the 90s and even in the 2000s that led us to believe that America was just this magical balloon and it just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger and nobody had to worry about it. All you had to do was just keep filling it with hot air. And you know, the job to fill it with hot air is the Federal Reserve. So according to Davies, if that situation reverses itself, you have a lot of problems. And so it isn't, you don't need, for example, people to read Karl Marx or to read Thomas Jefferson. According to Davies, people will simply spontaneously begin to act out and it, you know, by themselves or in groups. It's, you know, call it frustration disorder if you want to. I'm kind of concerned because I think I just gave the psychiatrist a DSM category, but yeah, people will reach a point where they will simply act out, according to Davies. So anyways, I don't think you should act out. I think you should think rationally. I think you should defend yourself, which, and as long as we have the rights and as long as it's legal, I think you should try to purchase a firearm, learn to use it safely if you have the legal right to own it. And I think you need to think about the fact that, yeah, there are some things that we have all taken for granted that might not necessarily be true. But just because society might be mean and just because the world might seem a little scary at times or whatever, it doesn't mean we should become less civilized. I think that if anything, we should try to become more civilized. So if you meet George Soros along that trail and George Soros is considering something stark, I would absolutely advise you not to help. You could consider, or I should say, I would absolutely advise you not to hurt, excuse me, not to help in the bad way, which means don't, you know, kill the guy. If he's going to kill himself, what's the point in doing that? Just leave him alone. But if you also would rather help and not just walk by in disgust and try to help the guy, honestly, I can't take that away from you. That's your choice. You know, in a free society, if someone's in pain and you want to take that pain on your shoulders, that's your right. That's your privilege in a sense, just for being a human with free will and dignity, self-respect and concern. And it's also okay if you want to walk on by. You know, don't hurt the guy, but just walk on by. And if you don't want to walk on by, lend a hand. But if you don't want to, that's okay. I understand. I would not harm the guy, but I just don't honestly know if I would help him. I don't know if I would give him a hug or say it's all okay. Because from my perspective, people like George Soros, you know, Lloyd Blankfein, Jamie Dimon, they might as well be walking, talking cancer tumors. That's what they seem like to me.